or use it whenever he wants to, right? And so I say to students, you know, you get a book out of the library, is it your possession? Well, no. It's got a date, it's got to be back and returned and so on. But if I have a book that I possess, and I want to, I can go and take the book and use it, right? But wisdom doesn't seem to be that, because we have all these practical needs and we can't be always giving ourselves over to wisdom, right? So it's not a human possession. Huh? You can't have it, you know, you don't have a firm hold upon it, right? Okay. Now, just we kind of state that a little bit, Thomas, doing there. How many negations are there in the definition, you see, of eternity? And sometimes I explain it this way. I say, let's put a definition on the word in English here. We all at once in perfect possession of unending life. Okay. Now you compare that to our life, right? Huh? Okay. Your life and my life. And your life and my life is measured by time, right? So your life and my life has a beginning and an end in time, right? Okay. And so you're negating the beginning and the end that our life has in time of the divine life, right? Okay. That's one negation, right? Okay. You're saying it has no beginning and no end, right? Okay. That's one difference in my life and God's life. That his life has no beginning and no end. But mine does, right? And then, all at once, right? That's negating the before and after in my life, even when I have my life, right? Okay? So that's the second negation, no before and after. Now, insofar as eternity has no before and after, it resembles the now of time, right? Because the now, in the strict sense, including none of the past, which is not now, and none of the future, the now is indivisible. It's like a point, dividing two halves of a line. So in the now, in the strict sense, which is between the past and the future, and contains none of the past and the future, there's no amount of time at all, because then the before and after would be existing together, right? Okay? So, now it seems that eternity resembles, what, the now of time. Huh? And the great Boethius, he'll sometimes compare these, and he'll say, the now that moves along and is always other makes time, right? The now that stands still makes eternity. It's a beautiful comparison, see? Aristotle says that the now of time in one way is always the same, another way always different. And as you compare motion in a sense, time itself to motion, because they both have what? A before and after, right? You can compare the now of time, in a way, to the body in motion. Huh? And the body in motion, in a way, is the same throughout the motion, but it's always other and other, because it's here or there. Right? And so the now kind of moves forward, right? Always in a different position. So in a way, it's always different, right? And so, Boethius says, the now that flows along makes time. The now that stands still makes what? Eternity, right? Okay. But there's a difference between the now that what? Flows along and the now that stands still. And this word possession, right? Could be taken as separating the now that stands still, right? From the now that's always getting away from us. I say, you know, even as a child growing up, you know, you're always told by your parents, you know, all good things come to an end. So how happy the birthday moment is time to go to bed or whatever, right? It never lasts. It's always getting away from us. Huh? So here you're negating, in a sense, the what? Always other character of the now, right? Okay. Now, if you could stop the now of time, see? And I always take the fairy tales things, you know, where the evil mother, stepmother, whatever it is, casts a spell upon the thing, right? And everybody's frozen. You see? And I can remember the pictures in the book, you know, the servants are bringing the dinner like that, yeah. And they're frozen like that, right? You see? So, if you could, and they'll stay frozen until the Prince Charming shows up and gives the princess a kiss, and then they all start to move again. Well, how much life do you have in that frozen now, you know? It's like an eating to do that now. And, so it's an extremely imperfect life you have in the now of time if you could stop it and freeze it at that moment, right?
Yeah.
So this is negating the imperfection, in a sense, of the life we have in the now of time, right? Yeah. And this is negating, to some extent, the always fleeting character of the now, which is always different, huh? I see. And some moments in our life are very enjoyable, you know, and you wish they would stay, but they don't, you know, and they're always just getting away from us, you know. So we can't possess this moment, you know. This great moment, you can't possess it. It's always getting away from you, right? And but if you could hold on to it, you wouldn't have much life in that anyway, you know. So sometimes I try to explain this a little bit as having, what, four negations, right? But two things are negating the time, right? The before and after in time, and the beginning and the end that things have in time. And two are, in a sense, touching upon negating the fleeting character of our now, although in some respects the now of time resembles the now of eternity, right? And the imperfection of life that you have in the now. What can you do during the now? Why can't you hear a Mozart melody in the now? That takes some time, right? Mm. I can't drink a glass of wine in the now. I can't have a cup of tea in the now. I can't do an article with Thomas in the now. It's amazing. I haven't even done it all. I have no time. I don't need to do anything. Actually, I need time. So there's a, maybe, you know, you stretch it to four negations, huh? Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful example of the via negativa. Mm-hmm. Charles de Koninck, when he did the course on time there in the fourth book of the Physics, kind of as a footnote there at the end of the course, he'd do a little bit of eternity, you know? Mm-hmm. But you'd see, you know, the importance of natural philosophy for understanding what? Theology, right? Well, you should really be taught natural philosophy before theology, right? And what's interesting in the life of Thomas Aquinas is that he went to university there in Naples, right? You know, before that's where he became Dominican, finally, you know, but there's a university in Naples. It was the only place in Europe at the time where the physics was available.
Oh.
You know, kind of a wild place, you know, but I mean, it was coming in, you know, from the, you know, to the Arabs and so on. And it's the only place. So it's kind of interesting to see divine providence, right? That he should have been at the one place where he could get the physics at an early age and get it into him and so on. And then, you know, eventually he writes this. Mm-hmm. But he couldn't have written this without knowing time and the now of time and so on. Mm-hmm. Now, Article 2. Whether God is what? Eternal, right? Huh?